So thank you, Emma, for inviting me to share a very brief thought from this week's Haftorah. We're all about Haftorah at the Women's Initiative. The Haftorah ends with a very unique phrase, chein chein la, grace, grace upon her. And it's referring to the rebuilding of the Beis Hamikdash, which the Navi, Zechariah, says comes with obstacles. And he envisions a mountain in front of the Jewish people and their mission in accomplishing this rebuilding. And the question can be asked, why chein chein la? Why this bracha of grace? Why not strength or honor? Why grace? And I think it's such an appropriate point to share with this group that when one works at something in a public sphere, and of course in the Navi referring to the rebuilding of the Beis Hamikdash, but it's the building that you're doing and the building of communities, the beauty and grace and favor that we all hope and pray for in order for our programs to be successful is really the bracha that Zechariah gives, chein chein la, to the rebuilding of the Beis Hamikdash. And certainly I wish to each one of you, chein chein la, that your programs be filled with chein, with grace, with warmth in all that you do. And we at the Women's Initiative are really so grateful for all the energy that you put in. It's reflected in the growth and energy in your communities and the enthusiasm with which you passionately program for. So thank you. And with that.
Okay. Thank you so much, Rebbetzin Shmimin. Thank you for just starting us off on that note of how important it is and how much we appreciate everyone who has taken the time to join us here today to discuss what you do, which is creating a meaningful experience for the women of your community, which essentially builds community. So I am very excited to introduce today Dr. Ayelet Shachar, Mrs. Shalwamit Hurwitz, and Mrs. Eve Levy, who are going to be presenting to us today about summer programming. Summer is a time when a lot of people's schedules are different, when maybe people have some time off from work, when the days are longer. The Shabbosim are definitely, Shabbos is always 25 hours, but the distribution of Shabbos feels longer. And it's an opportunity for us to think about what the programming in our community looks like. So in just one moment, I am going to turn over the floor to our panel for today, to Ayelet, to Shalwamit, and to Eve. But just before we do that, for those of you who have been with us at the Programming Idea Labs throughout the year, this is our last scheduled one for this cycle. Keep an eye out. We will be doing one coming up soon related to the beginning of next year. So keep an eye out for that. And in addition, I'm going to post in the chat right now, we are starting a Programming Idea Lab chat. So all of the questions that we love to ask at the end of these sessions, how would you make this work in a smaller community? Does anyone have an idea for a Tu B'Shvat? Anything of that sort, this is going to be a great place to have those discussions. So it's called the Idea Lab in Action. I'm posting it in the chat right now. Please feel free to join, share with anyone who may be interested. We'd love to continue the conversation there. And now, without further ado, and just one moment for me to spotlight everybody, I am excited to turn over the panel to Ayelet, Shalwamit, and Eve. Let me do the spotlighting. Hold on one second. Add spotlight. And okay. And I'm going to start off by asking our panelists to introduce yourselves, your name, where you're from, and what is the population that you generally program for or the context within which you have programmed. Let's start with Ayelet.
Okay. Hi, everyone. Nice to meet you all. I'm from Queens, and right now I oversee the Torah program. I'm the Torah program coordinator at the Ilyum's Initiative. So I program for women of Klal Yisrael across the world. And when we say across the world, we mean across the world. We program for women mostly from ages 18 to 120, but we also have programs for high schoolers, and we also have high schoolers who get involved in our programs, even if they're more directed toward adults. So that is the population we focus on, the women of Klal Yisrael, very broadly.
Okay, excellent. And Eve, would you like to tell us who you are, where you are, and what you do?
Okay. Hi, everyone. Eve Levy. I'm coming to you from Chicago. I live in the suburbs of Chicago. We moved here 4 years ago. Before that, we lived in Portland, Oregon for 7 years, building community there. And before that, Denver, Colorado for 4 years. And before that, Eretz Yisrael, where I also worked in a different demographic. I did seminary programming when I was there. And ever since then, I've been working with adults, mainly 40 to 70 years old, but obviously some younger, some older. But that's my main demographic. And
Do you want to just tell us for a moment? Prior to living in New Jersey, I lived in Chicago and had the privilege to cross over with Eve there. So Eve, do you want to just describe the L'Chaim Center briefly for everybody? Sure.
Yeah, it's a very unique place. I feel like Hashem plopped us in it feels like a treasure chest of neshamas. There are tens of thousands of Jews over here on the North Shore. We live in Deerfield. My husband and I run an outreach center. I'm sitting in it right now. I just came out of teaching. I have like 30, 40 women that come every Tuesday. People are thirsty for Torah, wisdom. We have classes every single day. I'm the only Orthodox woman here. There might be one or two that are starting to walk to Shul on Shabbos, but in general, it's a very secular environment. There's a lot of conservative, reform shuls all around, but we're the only Orthodox shul and space here in Deerfield. There's one an hour walk from here, but there's a lot of work to do over here. So my main demographic is working with women that are growing, not from yet, but. And I could talk about this in the next question or two. One of the programs that I recently started is called North Meets West, which is North Shore, like where I live, this whole bubble of beautiful Jewish neshamas that are on a journey, meets West Rogers or Skokie, you know, Peterson Park. And we have a whole logo, North Meets West. And we've been getting together all year to build a bridge between the communities. So slowly, slowly, I'm starting to get more and more from women coming to our programming, which is kind of new. So I feel like we're expanding in different ways.
That's amazing. That's super exciting. Okay. And Shalamit, do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself, where
sure.
you are?
Hi, program. Hi, I'm Shalamit Hurwitz, and I live in West Hempstead on Long Island. I am currently about to start my fifth year as PTA president at Yeshiva HaTorah, which is in Queens. And I previously served for 5 consecutive years, both as vice president and then president of the Sisterhood of Meshul Young Israel of West Hempstead. So I think the populations vary. You know, our school community is, we're not a community school. So we have a lot of different diverse communities coming from areas around Queens, and we have very different diverse observance levels. Within the Young Israel of West Hempstead, we're 800 families. So we have women, I mean, kids is not my domain for sure. They have separate programming for that, but really from young mothers, singles, you know, single parents, not married yet, all the way through elderly and senior citizens. We're in charge of all that programming.
Wow. Okay. That's a lot. I did not realize it was 800 families. That's huge.
Yeah.
That's massive. Wow. Okay. So we're here to talk about summer programming. And our next question is, what factors do you think about specifically when it comes to summer programming? You start feeling the weather, hopefully get warmer. Unlike it's been, I don't know what it's been like in Chicago, Eve, but it has been like winter one day, summer the next day. The black tights have not permanently gone away. Very confusing. But when you start feeling the weather warm up, what is it you start thinking about? What are the unique factors? Is it timing? Is it availability? Is it Shabbos? What first comes to your mind? Let's start with Shalamit.
Okay. I actually think that, yes, there are so many factors that go into summer programming. I find it to be some of our most successful programming. I think especially for parents, kids are not in school. There's no homework. There's no parent-teacher conferences. There's no this club and that club. Kids are in camp, either day camp or sleepaway camp. A lot of parents, you know, have less kids home. And summer just feels lighter, less responsibility. And I just find that overall, we actually get significantly better participation in the summer. That being said, summer can be very challenging as well, right? I think it's timing is crucial for summer. You need to look at the school calendars. You need to look at the community calendars. You need to look at the camp calendars. When is visiting day? Because if I run a full day, you know, program on a Sunday and it's a visiting day that's a popular camp in my neighborhood, nobody's coming. I think that, you know, you need to look at when are the 3 weeks, right? If I'm giving a shiur type program, great, no problem. But if I want something that maybe isn't in the spirit of the 3 weeks or not halakhically permissible, when is that? What are simchas like, right? What does that calendar look like after Tisha B'Av? Am I going to find a day or a time to run programs? And I think these are really important things, but it really is doable. If you plan, if you're organized, you can look at all the calendars. If you have to get other people involved, you can do that as well. And you can really find timing that, you know, like you said, Shabbos is very long in the summer. And I also do think that Shabbos is a wonderful time for programs because it's a long, long afternoon. Friday night, obviously, at least in West Hempstead, is nothing's going to be successful, but it's a long afternoon and starting with after shul. So, you know, it depends what your population is. Are you running programs that you want your young mothers to come out to? Then you need to make sure that whatever timing, look at the mincha time, right? If I'm overlapping 10 minutes with mincha, I'm not getting young moms to leave their kids. So make sure you're clearing davening times. Something else that we've done in our shul, which has proven to be successful, is we've teamed up with our youth programming. And we ask them to extend youth groups for 45 minutes. And we'll run a shiur then for women. And, you know, this way people could stay, their kids are taken care of. And, you know, sometimes there'll be a little kiddush, whatever it is, work together, work with the other disciplines in your shul, try to make it happen. If your population is people who you think are going to nap, obviously avoid that afternoon time slot. But overall, I do think that Shabbos is a great time, especially for, you know, if you're doing a family event, right? Or provide programming for the kids while you run a shiur for the women, whatever it is. There are so many hours in the day. And unless somebody's away, they're so happy to have something to do on a Shabbos. They're so happy when so much of our Shabbos revolves around community building. And I think so many of our programs revolve around community building, like really utilize it and make the most of it.
Amazing. Just to throw in there, we happen to have tried something similar in our shul for Shavuos. A lot of our shul are not like stay up all night types. So we realized most people were going to be at shul on the first day of Shavuos. So we extended babysitting also for, I think, an hour. We had two shiur slots of shiurim that morning in shul. There were so many more people that would have ever been able to be there at night. It actually worked out well. We were nervous people would clear out after shul, but we didn't. We had kiddush and then two shiurim and people actually stayed. So it was very nice. Okay, Ayala, I know that our conversations at the Women's Initiative have already turned Yamim Noraim and Yantif season, but when you're starting to consider the summer, what do you start thinking about in terms of attending?
So I'm coming from that sort of the Torah programming space. So one of the biggest factors that we're thinking of is teacher availability. So if you have a lot of teachers who we work with a global array of speakers. I guess not in the Southern Hemisphere. We're meaning like half, it's summer vacation in some parts of the world. Not all of our speakers are hot on summer vacation. Some of it are them experiencing winter, but we are thinking about teacher availability. Sometimes teachers that we would love to use are very busy with the school year, but the summer is an expanded time, they're off. So one of the things that opens up for us as an opportunity is teacher availability. And the other thing we're thinking of is people's general availability. So like I said, we cater from 18 to 120. So if you're thinking about college girls or people who work in a school setting, even if they're not teachers, suddenly they have time off in the summer. And then we're also thinking about the Jewish calendar, we would call it the 3 weeks Tisha B'Av, Bina Metzarim time programming, and how we can make that meaningful for people. So I would say those two biggest factors, people's availability and also just the Jewish calendar and the sort of the themes we're trying to drive home and provide inspiration for the two biggest pieces we're thinking of when it comes to programming.
All right, excellent. And Eve, what are you thinking about in terms of your programming?
Well, Emma, I could turn the question to you and ask, well, why is this the last one in the series? It's because we're all going into summer mode, right? So I'll admit that I look at summer as a time to recharge. I go much like when I got this topic for the title of today's talk, I kind of felt like, ooh, what could I pull upon? Because I see summer as a time to regroup with my staff. Like, I need to hire a new program director now. I need to get ready for the Yamim Narayim and, you know, put things in place for the whole year. So intentionally, we slow down on our programming over the summer months. Now, that being said, I think we do a crazy, insane amount of programming through the year. So when I tell you guys some of the programming that we have on our regular calendar, you're going to be like, that's a lot. So it's still a ton. People are not being, no one is complaining that we're not giving them enough programming. But I look at the summer as a time to kind of slow down and to take things outdoors. And we have much more like sitting around the you know, the fire pit and family barbecues and walk and talks, I like to call it, like a little bit of Torah, but on a beautiful trail. We have a facilitator that does this new thing called forest bathing. And I, like, we offer it when it's nice outside because we live in Chicago and it's miserable for like 8 months of the year. So we just, we have to kind of utilize this time of year to be more outdoors and less in the classroom. That's my personal take. So we kind of slow down. And I don't know if that answers the question. You wanted to know, like, you know, what we do to change the pace. And for us, we're regrouping during this time of year.
No, but I think you specifically pulled on the weather element is not small. Mm-hmm. But like, I remember when I first got to Chicago and you're like, oh, let's do this in February. And people are like, we are not leaving our house in February. I'm like, what about March? They're like, still not leaving our house in March. So when it comes to the summer, like, you can hopefully rely on the fact that it won't snow and you're able to like get outdoors a little bit. So
I want to add something really interesting. Yesterday, we had a class here, and afterwards I pulled the women together and I asked them, I said, guys, I'm going to be on a panel tomorrow talking about summer programming. And I asked them, like, what do you guys think we do well here? And what's the difference between our year and summer? And it was interesting, the group that was sitting around just finishing their class, there were two different demographics. There was the 70-year-old women, and they all said summer and the year is the same thing for us. Like, it's, there's no difference. We want everything that we're used to, our daily, our weekly classes. Like, they just want to keep going. They're not going anywhere. They're not traveling. They expect routine, which we provide. We don't stop any of our classes. But the other ladies, the ones that do have children that are finishing school and maybe going off to college, there definitely is a lot of transition in the air for people that have kids at home. So it was just really interesting to hear from both of the different demographics, like, you know, what they expect for the summer. Some of them are like, I'll see you in 2 months. Like, I'm out. And that's also okay.
Right. Okay. Fascinating. So now we're going to go around and start like the deep dive into programs that we have run. So I would ask each of you to describe one or two successful summer programs or a program you ran during the year that you think could be very successful in the summer. What was the program and what made it successful? And this time we're going to start with you, Eve.
Okay, great. So I'm going to talk about my favorite signature summer program, which is once a year. We usually do it at the end of the summer, but now I'm in full gear. You know, we just made our save the date. It's going to be actually the first week of September or beginning of September, but before the Chagim. And I take the women away, like, you know, it's only 10, 15 minutes away from where we live, but it really feels like you're far away. It feels like you're in the middle of a forest. It's at a nature park, like a nature reserve. We spend a lot of money securing the space, like, you know, and we cater lunch and we just pamper the women. And most of the time is spent outdoors. We start in a circle, we end in a circle. I talk about the circle being this, you know, this space of this of femininity where we're not, you know, we're all equidistant to Hashem. Like, there's dancing involved. There's, I don't know, as I might have mentioned, this forest bathing, but we have like a sound bath. I'm thinking of some of the things we've done. Have you guys ever heard of a sound bath?
What is it?
Oh my goodness. When we started doing this, we've done it already 3 or 4 times, but like sometimes like my husband and kids are like, Eve, you're like literally losing it, you know, like a sound bath. You all like lie on the floor and this woman comes with her porcelain bowls and like dings them with like different, you know, it makes noise. And everyone like walks out of that feeling like so healed and so relaxed. And I'm just like lying there, like pretending that I'm into it. I don't connect to everything that I run, but people enjoy it. People love it. So we keep offering it. And honestly, it goes back again. And again. People want to feel connected. they want to feel connected to each other, but they deeply, deeply want to feel connected to Hashem. And it doesn't really matter what you're providing. It just, as long as there's like a pathway, a portal for them to tap into their spirituality, I actually think that's like, you know, half the battle. They all want to feel that deep, like, meaning in whatever they're doing. So this day that we have planned, I call it the Soul Sisters Day. And it's a lot of fun, great swag, great energy, and obviously a lot of Torah. We bring in keynote speakers. We have one or two keynotes, which is the main chunk of the day, but we pad it on every side with fun activities. So from 10 to 4, people go home like kind of re-energized for the year ahead. So that's one program. This is already our, I don't know, third or fourth year that I'm living here in Chicago. We do it once a year. And we try to keep it on the small side. We capped it last year. The first time we did it was 40. Last year, we went up to 60. I'd like to see it stay in that range. I know that for some of you, like Shulamit, your synagogue is so huge, like you wouldn't be able to cap it. But I feel that there's a lot of intimacy that could happen in small groups. So, you know, as we need to scale, we'll see how we'll change things. But they need nourishment. So a deep dive.
One question came in regards to that. Is this program fee-based, and are all your other programs fee-based? Like, how do you go about charging, not charging?
So we were making the flyer yesterday. So I said, let's just keep the same price, even though for sure it doesn't cover the cost. We were charging $72 for the last few years. It, you know, between the space and flying in speakers, and usually we bring in our speakers from Israel. And I mean, this is quite a few $1,000 program, and it doesn't cover the cost. The fee that we're charging does not cover, but it's part of my budget, and I think it's really important. And I know that a woman going into the year feeling unrested, taken care of, nourished is going to show up so much more for our community and for their family, and it's worth the investment. So that's a good question. I also live in a community that is pretty, I don't know if I could say affluent, but people don't usually complain about the price. And if anyone would, we would let them come for free. But it doesn't happen so often. So I think every community has a different, different price thing. Like, people pay $25 to come for a class, and people come numerous times a week, and no one has an issue. We don't card them at the door. We have a machine. You come in, you like tap your card. It's not a big deal, but Baruch Hashem, it's not an issue.
Okay. Amazing. That sounds so fun. And the sound bath, I feel like I could fall asleep. Like, I could get a really good nap in there. Shalamit, do you want to tell us about one or two successful summer programs that you've run?
Sure. I did also just want to say, you know, Eve, you mentioned we have such a big shul, it's hard to cap it. Sometimes when you have such a big shul, it's almost even harder to build community and to get people to feel that connection to the community because it's so big. And that is definitely something that we keep in mind when we do programming. And I think one of our most successful programs actually stemmed from the program that we did every year, no longer really being feasible. So we used to every summer bring in a chef and do a cooking demo. And it came to a point, I mean, now there are all these new people out there, where we were really struggling to find someone that we didn't bring. But also, the costs have pretty much tripled, if not quadrupled, from what it used to be, making it really cost prohibitive if we don't want to lose thousands of dollars. So one summer we said, okay, why are we doing this big event? Let's do a summer camp. Let's try to really tap into everybody's interests. And we did it for 6 weeks, not 8 weeks. And each week, it was an hour-long program in an evening. Some were Sundays, some were weeknights. We really try hard to, you know, change up when we do programs. Not everyone can do a weeknight, not everyone can do a weekend. And each week was a different program. So one week we brought someone who makes chocolates and it was a hands-on demonstration. One week we brought a yoga instructor and we did, you know, a yoga class, which is not my thing, but it's somebody else's thing, right? One week we had a shiur. One week we played bingo, which sounds kind of immature, but I have to tell you that the women really, really loved it. And this program that really initiated from us having to pivot, right? We had something we did every year and it was really not working anymore, is really probably like the most successful program. And when we look back to say, why is that? Like, why is this successful when other programs, maybe we really do struggle to get people out? And I think what we learned from it is a few different things. Number one, our success here is not being measured by the number of people because they're smaller scale programs. I don't need 200 people in a yoga class to feel like it was a successful program. And I think it also really tapped into everyone's unique interests. There are those people who love exercise and they're going to feel part of my community because we provided that yoga class. There are some people who only come out if it's to learn Torah. So I just provided them an opportunity to become part of my sisterhood community with a shiur. Those people who love the kitchen or think this, you know, Instagram person who does chocolate is popular and they really, really want to see her, they just joined my community for that. So I think because it geared to so many different interests is why it's so successful. One of the weeks is a Broadway show. Now that obviously comes with a higher price point, but the bus fills up, right? The bus fills up every year because there are those people that that speaks to. So gauge your community, gauge what people's interests are, and work with it. And I think the biggest thing we learned from summer camp is sometimes things don't work out well and you really learn from it and pivot. The other program that I just wanted to mention very briefly that is very successful, both on a shul community level and a school community level, we always do like a welcome tea shalashuddhas for both. So from the school, it goes across various communities. We try to do it the same shadas if it works in our biggest communities. And for our shul, we do it with new members. And there was a time where people weren't coming. It was really hard to get people. And when you analyze why, so it was hard with the kids, you know, we were providing cookies, the kids, it's dinner time, they're getting cranky. So we pivoted our program. And now we provide, you know, cheese sticks and yogurt in addition to some of the other things. So parents can feed their kids dinner. We now have youth leaders just there. The kids aren't separated, but there's somebody watching the kids play on the playground so that the parents can actually meet other people. And again, Shabbos afternoon is long. So when you put the right things in place, you know, even if you have a program that maybe wasn't always so successful, if you put the right things in place, you can sometimes also tweak that program to be even more successful for you.
I think that's so smart about having like the kids' food to provide as dinner. Like,
it makes such a huge difference.
Mm-hmm. It makes a huge difference. That's so smart. I'm really taking notes. I'm gaining so many ideas. So thank you, everyone. And Ayala, what are one or two programs that you've created that have been successful and maybe are coming down the pipe? Maybe people can get a sneak preview of what's coming as well.
Okay. Yeah. You're going to get a sneak peek. We run a program that we've been running, Baruch Hashem, since 2019, called the Elite Beit Midrash. It actually started as an in-person program for young adults, and then it actually ballooned into a much bigger program for a global audience, where we actually have around 300 to 400 women registered for the program in the summer. And it's a global audience. You can join from anywhere in the world. We call it the Elite Virtual Beit Midrash. So Pshuto Kamashmo, it is a Beit Midrash that literally is global. We have teachers who are all over the world and we have people learning from all over the world. We offer 6 courses. And the idea behind the program initially was that people are looking for consistent Torah learning, that they feel they can actually sink their teeth into a topic that's not just a one-off shiur, but in a way that's sort of like, it's still bracketed. So there's like a time commitment and you know that you're delving into something and feel like you're really getting a grasp on something, but it sort of feels tangible within your schedule that you can make it work. So we've had different iterations of it. This coming year, we had a twice a week model for courses. This year, we're trying a once a week model where it lasts for 3 weeks. Actually, this year, it falls neatly during the 3 weeks. Exactly. And every single week, once a week, you learn with the same teacher. So you can choose from 6 different really interesting course options. Everything spanning Tanakh, Halacha, Jewish history, Avodas Hamidos, Musar, Machshava, Hashkafa, a really wide array of topics and a really diverse range of speakers that you'd otherwise not necessarily have access to. You may find their stuff online, you may not, but to learn from somebody in real time with other people and ask your questions and discuss in real time is, I think, a very unique opportunity. So that program will be running the summer in the middle of July, July 14th to the 31st. And it's open to women of all ages, all backgrounds. It's highly text-based with a lot of scaffolding involved. So it really can speak to a wide range of learners and incredible, incredible teachers. So that's been, Baruch Hashem, a very successful program. And what's nice is that you have a range because everybody likes different topics. And some people are going to register for one course and some people are going to register for three courses and some people are going to register for all six courses. What we do is that we try to offer both morning options and evening options so that either just based on your schedule or where you are in the world, it's not so feasible to get online at 8 p.m. if you live in Israel, but maybe a 9:30 slot on a Monday morning does work for you. Or if you work somewhere. So it offers a lot of, opportunity, both in terms of timing and in terms of topic and interest. And so we Baruch Hashem, appeal to a wide audience of women across the world. So that is Baruch Hashem, one of our very successful programs that we run here at the Women's Initiative. What we've done in the past for shuls and sort of communities, it doesn't have to be a shul, is that we offer shuls the opportunity to guest partner with the program. So the shul or the organization pays a fee. So instead of people registering for the course and paying for each course, the shul pays a set price to the department. And then everyone in that shul or organization gets a coupon code to register for free. So it's a nice way for communities, whether it's a shul or an organization, to offer summer learning programs. If they don't want to bring in, let's say, a scholar in residence, but they want, women are interested in a topic that they want to learn in depth over the course of a few weeks, they can learn from in a virtual way from a speaker. There's also the option to, let's say, have the shiur, in the community, at the community shul, and then have a shiur in person right after, or to have a discussion group about the shiur right after. So there's a lot of ways to work with the program in your community and make it, build it out to be a summer learning program where the cost on the community or shul organization is much lower than it would be to hire a speaker. But the opportunity to sort of personalize it to your community and women's interests. So that's a summer program that we run. And one of the programs that we've run for many years, but we've actually made into more of a community program that may be of interest to people here today, is our Canon Torah Sinai program. So in the past, that was a Sphira learning program. And this year we ran it for Sphira and Baruch Hashem, it was very successful. We did a different midah every single week with amazing speakers from, again, across the world. A different speaker covered a different midah each week of Sphira. What we added in this year, which was new, was the Shabbos learning component. So people learned on their own 5-minute audio recordings every single day. And then we provided guided learning sheets to communities so they can gather on Shabbos afternoon, Friday night. They want to do a Sunday or Monday, whatever worked best for people in the community. And everything was included. So you had all the sources, you had the context, you had the background, you had all the sort of discussion questions and angles. So it was sort of a prepared learning session handed to you. We gave communities flyers that they could edit. And we had 160 community leaders running it literally across the world, from Australia to England to South Africa to LA. Really, Chas Hashem, it was a very successful program. And people really had an opportunity to sit down on Shabbos and learn together and discuss concepts, and whether that was in a shul setting or whether it was a group of friends gathering at someone's house on a Shabbos afternoon. The beauty, I think, was that there wasn't any sort of preparation involved for someone running it. So you needed a host and you needed, to edit the flyer, but we gave you sort of the Canva to edit. But then we gave you the packet. And so that's a program that is sort of timeless. Midos are sort of relevant at all points of the year. And that's available for anybody who's interested and wants to run the program in their community on a long summer Shabbos or really anytime. We are so happy to provide those resources for you to gather together and learn together on a Shabbos afternoon. I think Shabbos afternoon has just been a nice sort of touch point for people so far, but really you can do it on a summer day, a summer night, any night of the year. But it's all sort of prepared for you, and it doesn't take so much preparation, but there's a lot of, I think there's a lot of meaning and deep discussion that comes out of it, and a feeling of community, both with one another and also just a real connection to Torah that women, Baruch Hashem, got from it. So that's been a great program, and we're happy to really partner with you and personalize it to you if it could be helpful.
I have to say, we ran it in our community, not because I'm biased that it was a Women's Initiative program, but because I thought it was really quality material. And a lot of women who don't regularly show up for a full shiur, that's not necessarily their mood, on these long Shabbos afternoons, they really enjoyed having that socialization point, that they were happy to come. And also it was a super low barrier of entry. They were able to participate in the learning, even if they don't necessarily have the skills for a text base here or the attention span for someone talking for 45 minutes. Like, this was conversational. It was sharing of your personal experience. And we really found it to be productive. So I definitely advocate for using that any time of the year. It was excellent for our community. Okay. And now that we've shared such incredible ideas, sometimes there are challenges. As Shalomit said, you can plan an entire program and then you find out that it's visiting day and it can flop. What is a challenge that you've encountered when it comes to summer programming that might be something that we should keep in mind in terms of our own programs? Ayala, do you want to start us off for this one?
Sure. So we try to, I think, use the challenge to our advantage. Sometimes, and I represent was telling us that she had 4 weddings this Sunday alone. So I think sometimes we run into this issue when we're trying to program when there's a lot of simchas going on in the summer. And so we try to use the 3 weeks when we have this sort of quiet time period to sort of like chop people. when the schedule is sort of calmer and kids are away in camp and the simcha calendar is much lighter, to program specifically then. And people are away. So sometimes that's difficult. It's sort of like honing in on vacation time, like sort of that sweet spot between when school ends and when kids are back from camp and when people aren't taking summer vacation. So that is a challenge. I think it's coming to terms with the fact that we can't get everybody, but we try to offer different touch points throughout the summer that everybody has some access point.
Okay, excellent. Eve, what is a challenge that you run into with summer?
So being that like my kids' school and the place where I live, the people here are on a different school schedule and public school systems and all different, it is impossible to get everyone together at the same time. And it's just, thank you for honoring that, Ayala. You're like, you know, it is what it is. But instead of seeing it as a challenge or seeing your programming as being unsuccessful, I think we really need to pivot for the real opportunity that the people that are here, that are not traveling, that are, you know, that they're seriously, they're just, they want to be loved. They want to be seen. They want to be attended to. And there's an opportunity with the challenge of not having the numbers that we could really hone in on giving people what they need that we can't necessarily do all year when there's masses of people. So for example, there's a very like, you know, a demographic within my community of people that can't come to my weekday classes. I just finished teaching and there was one lady that came up at the end of the class and she said, Eve, I'm on summer break now. She's a teacher. And she's like, she looked so happy to be back. And she said, I'm going to be here all summer learning with you. And that's just amazing. Like to just like zoom in on the people that missed the 10 months of programming that all their peers that are not working full time were able to do. Something that I'm doing for the first time is I'm able to bring a group of women on the momentum trip during the summer. We tend to do spring and fall, like those are our 2 go-tos where we lead our trips during the year. But when I put out the dates for this June 29th trip, like, you know, beginning of summer, there was such an outpouring of applicants of women that would not be able to go during the year for various reasons. There's such an amazing cohort of teachers that are like, this is my opportunity. And also to bring leaders that would never be able to go because they're always teaching. And I feel like they deserve it as well. So I'm looking at the challenge as an amazing opportunity to just like shift into to work with different people during this time. So I think it's amazing. And everyone deserves a little bit of attention.
Excellent. And Shalomit, what's a potential challenge that you've noticed as summer programs?
I agree with everything else people said, obviously, simchas 3 weeks, vacationing. And Eve, I agree with you also, like we have so many people who are in our community who are teachers during the year whose summer is their only opportunity. We had one time a group of teachers come over to us and say, we can never go to shiurim during the day. We have little kids at night. And we started initially it was when our 16 Handles was owned by someone from our shul. It was ice cream and Torah every Tuesday in the summer. And now it's poolside, you know, we bring frozen yogurt there. And to one person, 40 women on a Tuesday morning may not be success. To us, it's fabulous, right? And not because of numbers, but because a group of women wanted a program. We implemented it and we met their needs, and it's thriving. I know that for me, one of the biggest challenges is summer comes right like once a year. It's not ongoing programming. So it's very easy to just go back to what you did last summer, right? Oh, here's my calendar from last year. Let's just do that again. And I really do challenge everyone here. We've been trying a lot lately. Take a fresh set of eyes and look new. It's always easy to just repeat, but it's not always exciting, you know, and things change, people evolve, communities change, interests change, you know, what's popular may change. And just take a look again at your programming and say, should I really be repeating what I did last summer? It's very easy to do that. Or do I wanna rethink it, be more creative, do something a little different? And I think the other biggest challenge for us over the summer when we do try to run more programming is cost. And I know that's one thing we haven't really talked about so much today. There are programs that, whether it's for the school or the shul, we don't even care if we break even. It's all about building community. When we bring speakers, we do not charge people. You know, we might ask for sponsorships, but there's never a fee to come listen. When we do certain programs, we can have more leeway, but if we're running a program where we're paying per head and we're making mezuzahs and it's costing us $50 a head, there is a limit to how little we can charge. You know, so when you're running a lot of programs, it is hard for people. You know, I'm not counting other people's pocket. It does become challenging for people who want to come out on a continuous basis. So we do also keep that in mind. It is important to balance out the programs that you're charging for, the programs that you're not charging for, and to just be mindful that not everybody can pay $50 once a week, or not everybody wants to, right? It's, but it is an important piece to keep in your mind when you are making, you know, running programs.
Right. Super important that like we want to do so much and there's great ideas, but also to keep in mind, like, is that going to bar more people?
Right.
That's a really important point. Okay. Now we are going to do a final round, a speed round, I like to call it, at the end, lightning round, where people can share ideas quickly. And then we're going to open up with questions. So if you've had questions, keep them in mind. You can put them in the chat. We're going to do one more question and then it'll be time for the open question and answer. So if you could, in 1 to 2 sentences, what are 1 to 2 practical tips or tricks for implementing the programs that you've shared? Is it don't forget to, I don't know, always buy ice? Like, what is successful to your programs in the summer? 1 to 2 tips or tricks, 1 to 2 sentences. Ayelet, we'll start with you.
Okay. There should have come to mind that I think is helpful for really any program that we run here and probably just good use of us in general for programming. One is no decisions about us without us. Sometimes we love to come up with grand ideas and we think it's going to land so well in our sort of like fishbowl where we're talking. But really it's sort of out of touch with the actual population we're serving. So it's really helpful, I think, to get feedback from the people that we're programming for. Is this going to land well? Does this work with your schedule? Oh, apparently everybody's involved in something on Monday and we planned a whole amazing program Monday. We're making this decision about us without us. So I think no decisions about us without us and getting people's perspective that you're going to be programming for. And the other I'll share that I learned actually in the last program idea lab from Tzipora Pogrens. I thought it was brilliant. And if you were there, it's still worth the chazara. Involvement is investment. And the more that you can involve people who are part of your program actually as like active participants, giving someone this responsibility to pick up the ice, like Emma said, the more people are involved and feel an achrayas for the program, the more invested that they are. So I think those are 2 helpful programming tips.
Excellent. Shalamit.
I agree with all that. I know for me, lists. I am a list person. I plan and I write lists. And you just have to bullet point everything out and check it off as you go along. And whether that's electronic or written, you know. And I also think delegate, because, you know, really, if I could leave everyone here with one last message, so many of us, what we're doing here is a volunteer full-time job and often in addition to a full-time job. And you have to delegate. You have to get a team of people on your side if you want to be successful. And that being said, you also have to be kind to yourself. You are going to put so much time and effort, and some things are going to be obviously amazing and successful, and other things may not be. It's okay. Move on. Learn from it. and move on. Like, just be kind to yourself. You know, you do so much and you do so much good, and plan, delegate, and the rest is out of your hands.
So important. You cannot do it all alone. That's a very important point. And Eve, end us off.
Okay. Well, it's a little bit of a different tip, but I experience this all the time. When you believe in what you're doing, it tends to go. And sometimes, like, we're kind of going through the motions and we're not, like, bought into the program. And I had this in my center. I'm embarrassed to say that there was this event that I was running, but, like, maybe I wasn't so into it or didn't publicize it or didn't really talk it up because I didn't really, I don't know, I wasn't feeling it. One person showed. The very next week, same program, different speaker, but I was excited about it. Over 60 people showed. So I really believe that our energy is contagious. People are coming, yes, for the program, but they're trusting you. They know you. They know you, Shalom. They know you're, whoever is running the program, the face that's going to welcome them. Very often they're coming because you're excited about something and they want to be connected to you. So that's my little tip. It's like, if you really believe in it, it's going to be successful. It already is successful. People come, they want to be a part of your life, of your journey, of your community. And there's also this other tip that sometimes I lean on, creating some FOMO. I never push people to come. I'm not a pushy person. But when people don't come and they see the pictures of it or they hear about it, and we'll do a recap at the next meeting or the next class and people talk about it, I'll give like a few people to share what they learned from the last night's program. They feel like, oh, I missed out. So creating this feeling of FOMO, like, and also Baruch Hashem, because some of our, you know, successful events are maxed out with our space, sometimes we have to close registration. It's a really good problem to have. Like, to say we are sold out, you know, next time, like, please register. It's a good thing. Like, creating that space that's like closed, like, people want in. So believe in it and keep wearing your heart on your sleeve. Talk about what you're excited about. People want a part of it.
Incredible. Okay, we are going to open it up now for some open question and answer. If anyone has a question, you can put it in the chat or you can feel free to unmute. And we'll allow time for any questions if there are.
I'll just jump in with a comment. The energy is contagious. I'm really inspired. So now the effort needs to be on getting idea to implementation. This is wearing my shul hat, not my OU hat. So thank you, Emma. It's really, really exciting. I'm the ideas are percolating, and I really appreciate each one of you. You really add insight and energy. Thank you.
Well, Ayala did a really good job because I'm getting off this call and I'm going to go sign up for her programs that she spoke about.
Yay! Amazing. Okay. If there are not any questions, then we are going to end it here, but I'm just going to post in the chat one more time the link to join the new WhatsApp group, Idea Lab in Action, so that we continue to have conversations like these where when we need that program idea, we brainstorm with each other. So that is now again in the chat. And thank you everyone for joining. Really, really appreciate it. Thank you so much to our panelists. You were incredible. Very much appreciated. Have a great day, everyone.